A very good evening to all Kayamitas, all brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. Today is 17th February 2022, Thursday class. So we are back from our Chinese New Year break. We break for Chinese New Year more than 15 days. So now is the first class of the Chinese New Year. So we will continue sharing from this book. The Wonderful Dhamma Lotus Flower Sutta in Mandarin is Miao Fa Lian Hua Jing. We are at page 201 on the hard copy, but on the soft copy, I think it's chapter 1, page 4. Just relax body and mind and maintain some form of attention. We will have our usual half an hour of awareness-based meditation. We will off the light, then you can proceed with your meditation. Just relax body and mind completely. Then maintain silent inner awareness to just develop the stability of mindfulness within. So this awareness-based meditation is very simple. Its main purpose is to develop stability of inner awareness within. So to be aware, you don't have to be in any particular way of meditation. You only have to understand the moment you are silent without thought, you are already aware. So just relax body and mind completely and let things be. Whatever arise, let it arise. Don't resist. Don't suppress. Don't try to control or do anything. You just maintain the awareness silent within to realize the silent mind. So we will let you meditate on your own for about 30 minutes. I will set the alarm. Then when the 30 minutes is up, the alarm will trigger. Then I will ring the bell 3 times. And upon hearing the bell, you can slowly, mindfully come out of the meditation. To maintain awareness, it's very simple. No need to do anything. Just completely silent. The moment you are without thought, the awareness will be automatically there. Just let the mind settle down. Whatever thought arise, let it arise. If you don't do anything, it will return to its original state. Then whatever sankhara activity or movement due to your spiritual, a lack of spiritual faculty. So when your spiritual faculties are not stable, they are not there, then the opposite five, which is your mental hindrance, they will be there. Yeah. So because of mental hindrance, you create thinking, you create mental activity, because you will have all those five mental hindrance mind state. Like when there is the lack of peace, when you have fear, worry, anxiety, your mind becomes restless. When you are not sure, faith is not there, your mind becomes like not stable and you start to create your own doubt. Then when you do not see the importance of training this mind to develop this type of meditation, you will fall into what we call sloth and torpor, the third mental hindrance, which is the sleepy mind or lethargic mind. So when the mind is without virya, without faith, sadhana, do not see the importance of such training, then it will develop into this state of sleepiness, lethargic mind. Mm-hmm. So this is a mental hindrance because it prevents you from entering the meditative state or inner peace, inner calmness, and inner awareness. Then likewise, because of your habitual tendency throughout the day, you are not able to maintain mindfulness and awareness. You don't have the Dhamma wisdom, or what we call yoniso manasikara, to enable you to be at peace in the midst of life. That's why throughout the day when you are living your daily life or doing your household activity and career activity, you may constantly react and stir your mind. Every moment of sense experience, when you see something, hear something, smell something, taste something, or recall something, you tend to react or stir based on your habitual tendency, your like and dislike, your preference, pleasant and unpleasant sense experience. So when you do that, it becomes mental hindrance. It will make you like very heedless. You think a lot. Your mind state oscillates between the duality of like and dislike, pleasant and unpleasant sense experience. This arises because you develop without understanding the first two mental hindrances of sensual desire and ill will. Whatever you cling on to, you like, you develop the desire for it. That's why the Buddha called it sensual desire. But things that you don't like, you develop the aversion, the ill will, the dislike. That's why you try to push it away. You try to suppress it, control it, or do away with it. So all these are the signs of mental hindrance arising. They arise because you lack the five spiritual faculties of Sadha, Virya, Sati, Samadhi, and Panya. So with this understanding, you will be able to develop this awareness-based meditation. Even for those who still lack spiritual faculty, you can actually still develop the ability to meditate by having this understanding not to allow the mind to heedlessly arise and create all this mental hindrance. You just silent, maintain awareness, and let things be. Whatever arise, let it arise. Then you just maintain the awareness within to be aware, aware, aware. Then all this heedless thinking, or what we call sankara activity, due to mental hindrance, they will start to slow down, and cease. Finally, it will dissipate all the momentum of thinking and finally cease because you didn't do anything. You don't want to know. You don't want to like develop any further thinking or mental activity to analyze, to reason, to condition your own mind states to arise through habitual tendency and lack of understanding. So when all these activities stop, means your thought is not active. You are just relaxed away. Then as this sankhara activity slow down and finally cease, that is what you're supposed to realize. When it sees, the mundane mind no more. When the mundane mind no more, when the thought activity no more, when sankhara no more, then what happened? Find out. That which does not need all this activity, that one is the true mind, the unconditioned, your silent mind. So when you just let things be, maintain awareness and silent, then you will realize that silent within. The true mind, which is originally tranquil, still, without thought, without duality, without any aggregates of mind, just that nature within that is away. So that is the one you need to realize. Once you realize that, stay there, maintain the awareness and let things be. Don't do anything. Let it stabilize. So initially, maybe it's not easy, but if you have the faith, the understanding, the patience, then you patiently walk towards it, allow this awareness to stabilize. Then your meditation will come to be and you will be able to realize this mind states within. Then you will start to understand clearly what this mind is all about. Then how from this silent mind, the nature within, the mundane mind, which is a byproduct from this nature, comes about. They are very near to each other. The movement of this thought process or mundane thinking from that nature is very, very fast. And that mundane mind can come to be is because we have the senses, we have the memory. So all this thinking, thought process, they are respond to memory, views, opinion, and conditioning. That's how they come to be. If you don't have all this, if you have the understanding, you don't have to think technically. The mind will just be silent, peaceful, away within. Then from the awareness, you can meditate, you can develop understanding, you can observe and come to understand clearly who are you, what are you. The first thing that you have to come to understand is without thought, who are you, what are you. When thought arises, who are you, what are you. So all these are the inquiry that you can develop, and finally the understanding will arise by itself. Okay, for those who are following the soft copy, we are at chapter 1, page 4. So we have pinned the page for you. We will continue from this disciple of the Buddha, Punya Maitreya Niputra. So Punya Maitreya Niputra takes his name from a combination of his father's name, Punya, meaning fool, and from his mother, Maitreyani, which means compassionate woman. Putra means son. Among the Buddha's disciples, he was the foremost expounder of the Dhamma. So he can expound the Dhamma very well. Just as he was born, an auspicious rain of jewels fall from the heaven upon his house. So this Punya Maitreyani Putra, he is the foremost in expounding the Dhamma. So every other Buddha's disciple, they have their own unique quality. Like Ananda, very good memory. He can remember all the sutta, even if he had heard it only once. Then we go to the next top 10 disciple, Subhati. So Subhati, as we all know, he appeared within the Diamond Sutta very often. He was the disciple who actually requested for the Diamond Sutta and helped the Buddha in asking questions and all those things. So Subhati's name means empty born. Because when he was born, the family treasury were discovered to be empty. And suddenly, all the wealth, all the treasury, whatever there is there, gone. Because he doesn't want to have anything when he arrives. Then his father consulted a diviner who told him this was an extraordinary or extremely auspicious sign. And so he was also known as good and auspicious. Then exactly 7 days after he was born, the wealth reappeared in the treasury and he became known as good appearance. So this is the unique quality of Subhati. Then Ananda. Ananda was the Buddha's first cousin and his attendant. Means he attended to the Buddha and he also helped to repeat the Buddha's sutta or teaching when the Buddha is not around. He also compiled and edited the suttas. His name means rejoicing. Ananda means rejoicing. Because he was born on the day the Buddha realized Buddhahood. Rejoicing, his father gave him the name. And the entire country celebrated the Buddha's enlightenment. Rahula was the Buddha's son. The Buddha is said to have three wives. The senior one is Gopika. The next was Yasodhara. And the junior was Mrigadava. Rahula was the son of Yasodhara. When he was born, the member of the Sakyan clan from which the Buddha came were outraged because the Buddha had already left home for 6 years. They all said she's certainly been up to no good. The Buddha has already been, he left the palace for 6 years. So how could she legitimately have a son? So that was the argument that they put forward. In truth, Rahula had dwelt in his mother's womb for 6 long years. But no one believed it. It was too improbable. The angry Sakyan wanted to punish her, to put her to death. And the evil rumors spread throughout the street and all over the countryside. Soon everyone knew that the Buddha has been absent for 6 years and his wife has given birth to a son. One of Yasodhara's servants spoke to the king on her behalf, saying that she had not done anything untoward, and that the child really was the Buddha's son. But no one believed her because it's simply impossible to carry a child for 6 years. At that time, Yasodhara made a vow. If I violated the rules of conduct, then when I jump into a pit of fire, my son and me were burned. If I am not guilty, then the heavenly spirit will protect us and we will not burn. Then people make a large pit filled with lots of wood and lit a roaring fire, holding Rahula in her arm. She threw herself into the flaming pit. Miraculously, it turned into a pool of water and a lotus emerged to catch them. Seeing this, the king and everyone else realized they had made a mistake. They knew that the situation with Yasodhara and her son was very special and they stopped slandering her. So Rahula's name means obstacle. In a former life as a child, he had plucked a mouse hole with a piece of wood and waited 6 days before he removed it. As a result, he received the retribution of having to dwell in her mother's womb for 6 years. In his mother's womb for 6 years. Everyone should think it over. The network of cause and effect is indeed severe. That's why we have to be careful about karma we have to really pay attention to karma. You don't think karma is like something you can take for granted or laugh about or have fun with. Just a small mistake like that cause him a lot of problems. So the network of cause and effect is in this CBA. Rahula was the Buddha's son, and even he had to undergo the 6 years of retribution in the womb. Obstacle also means, or also refer to the fact that he created a lot of trouble for Yasodhara. He was quite an obstacle. Ultimately, where did Sakyamuni Buddha's son come from? Was he actually Sakyamuni Buddha's son? Yes. Did Sakyamuni Buddha have his son in the manner common to ordinary husband and wife? No. Before the Buddha left home, Yasodhara expressed a desire to have a son. The Buddha merely pointed his finger at her and she became pregnant. This may sound like a myth, but it is only one of the many such occurrences within the Buddha Dharma. It is an inconceivable rhyme. If you want to research and verify it, there is no way to do so, except by working hard and cultivating until you reach the level where you will know that the rhyme of the Buddha is miraculous and hard to conceive of. It is inconceivable. Just now, two people came in and listened to the lecture for a while, but probably they didn't like what they heard, so they left. It is not easy to see through the sutra lecture every day. One must truly have great good roots in order to be able to sit here comfortably. The two of them left because they did not feel comfortable at all. So these are the things that cultivators should understand. You don't have the faith, the understanding, and the past affinity, then you cannot have the causes and conditions to receive all this teaching. Great arhats such as this, whom the assembly knew and recognized. Such as this refer to the above mentioned 21 great arhats, whom the great assembly knew. Knew means that in their heart they understood them. Recognized means they had seen them with their own eyes. To understand by means of the mind and eye is called know and recognize. In Chinese, the phrase know and recognize also means sense. Those with good sense have wisdom. However, you can look at it from the opposite angle. If you can truly be without sense, that is genuine wisdom. If you can truly be without sense, then you can also be without thought or scheme. If you are without thought or scheme, your own inherent wisdom will certainly manifest, and this is your genuine sense and wisdom. So in explaining doctrine, you must explain the opposite angles as well as the doctrine themselves. Thus, these great arahats were known and recognized by the assembly. Great arahats are not small arahats. In Hong Kong, there is someone nicknamed Little Arahat. He is a little monk, and he goes around laughing and joking from morning till night. He is very innocent, and he won't accept any offering from people at all. If he does accept something, he immediately gives it away to someone else. So everyone calls him Little Arahat. Great Arahat accept offerings from humans and God according to the meaning of the name. One is worthy of offering. They have also slain thieves and undergo no more birth. As I previously mentioned, not only have they slain the thief, they have slain the non-thief as well. But that really sounds unreasonable to me, you said. What makes you think the great Arahats are reasonable? They have spiritual power and can perform transformations. If you want to reason with them, it simply can't be done. They have also slain the non-thief. At the Arahant level, what are not taken to be thief at the Bodhisattva level are still seen as thief. And so they must kill the non-thief. If going from the small vehicle to the great vehicle, the non-thief must also be slain. So all this we can just skip. Then the next part of the sutta is, moreover, present were those who needed further study and those beyond study, 2,000 in all. The lesser known, Bhikkhuni Mahaprajapati was there with a retinue of 6,000 and also Rahula's mother, Bhikkhuni Yasohara, with a retinue. Then the commentaries. Moreover, present were those who need further study and those beyond study, 2,000 in all. So we will read through the commentaries now. Not only were these great Arahat present, but there were 2,000 of those with further study and those beyond study. The position of those with further study is that previous to the attainment of the fourth fruit of the Arahant, they still have more to learn. Means they are either the first stage of sainthood, second stage of sainthood, or third stage of sainthood. They haven't realized Arahantship. The position beyond study is the fourth stage of friction, or what we call the sainthood way, where they fulfill the realization to become Arahant. Although there were 2,000 of them, they represent the 10 aspects of suchness, which will be discussed later. To simply name them, they are the suchness of the marks, suchness of the nature, suchness of the substance, suchness of the powers, the suchness of the function, the suchness of the cause, the suchness of the condition, the suchness of the effect, the suchness of retribution, and the suchness of ultimate equality of beginning and end. Each of the 10 aspects of suchness divides into 10, making 100 aspects of suchness. Each of those 100 aspects of suchness divide into 10 again, making 1,000 aspects of suchness. Thus, the use of the word 1,000, 2,000 in all. Then the Bhikkhuni Mahaprajapati was there with her retinue of 6,000. Maha here means great. Prajapati means love of the way. Great love of the way was the sister of the Buddha's mother. 7 days after the Buddha was born, his mother died and was reborn in the Tavatinsa heaven. Then her sister Maha Prajapati raised the Buddha as her own child. Not only did she do so for Sakyamuni Buddha, but she was the aunt and foster mother of 1,000 Buddhas before. With her retinue of 6,000, refer to her relatives, friends and such. Then Rahula's mother, Bhikkhuni Yasohara, also with her retinue, the Buddha's wife Yasohara, later led the home life as the Buddha's disciple to become a Bhikkhuni too. A Bhikkhuni is a woman who had led home. The word also had the same three meanings as the word Bhikkhu. That is a mendicant, frightener of Mara, and a destroyer of evil. With her retinue, refer also to the great many people. All assembled at the speaking of the Dhamma Flower, Lotus Sutta. There were 80,000 Bodhisattvas and Mahasattvas. So, commentaries. Bodhisattvas, enlightened beings, Mahasattvas are great bodhisattvas with seven qualities discussed below. Bodhi means enlightenment, and sattva means beings. So a bodhisattva is an enlightened being who enlightens other beings. Bodhisattva are also known as living beings who have great minds for the way. They are also living beings, but they have great large mind for the way. They are also called beginning night. Mahasattvas are the great bodhisattvas. The Mahasattvas have seven qualities of greatness. The first quality is Mahasattvas are complete with great roots. Their extreme deep foundation is a kind of greatness. They are great in that they have, as the sutta text states, planted the roots of a mind-right virtue for many lives and throughout many eons. They have sent down and nurtured roots of goodness, which are now extremely deep. Good roots are called roots of virtue, and they are the basis for moral virtue. They have sent down the roots of the virtuous nature. How massive are those roots? They are limitless and boundless. A mind right indicates their great quality. As the Vajra Sutta say, you should know that such people will have planted good roots, and not just one Buddha, two Buddha, three, four, or five Buddhas, but will have planted good roots with meaning, with measureless millions of Buddhas. The Mahasattva have planted their great roots of virtue in the presence of as many Buddha as there are grains of sand in limitless, boundless, thousands of billions of Ganges river. So they are complete with great roots. So these are the extent of the Mahasattva's great virtue. So from this you will understand they have encountered so many Samasambuddhas. Then they have perfected themselves over the long distant eons and eons and eons of cultivation. Then they also have cultivated great affinity with all these Samasambuddha. That's why when we cultivate, we must cultivate great affinity with all these great beings, bodhisattvas, mahasattvas, and Samasambuddhas. Mahasattva, the second unique quality is they possess great wisdom. Where did they acquire this wisdom, this great wisdom? It came as a result of having brought forth the great resolve of Bodhi. Bringing forth the great resolve for Bodhi, they resolved to cross over all beings, means take the bodhisattva vow. However, although they cross over all beings, they do not become attached to the mark of having crossed them all. As the Vajra Sutta also say, all bodhisattvas, mahasattvas, should subdue their mind with the vow. I must cross all living beings, those born from womb, born from moisture, those born by transformation, those born with form, without form, those with thought, those without thought, those not completely with thought and not completely without thought, to enter Nirvana without residue and to be taken across to extinction. Yet of the immeasurable boundless number of beings thus taken across to extinction, there is actually no being been taken across to extinction. So this is how the Diamond Sutta put it, is it? Because in the unconditioned ultimate sense, there is no monk. But when you cultivate, it is within the existential world of monk. That's why people who don't have the understanding, they become confused. There is actually no contradiction. That's why Buddha Dharma is not easy to understand. It is because to cultivate and develop the true understanding, you need to understand the two aspects of Dhamma. One is the unconditioned Dhamma. The other one is the conditioned Dhamma. Then on top of that, you also have to understand what that form and mind is. That's why it's very complicated. And without those understanding, it's very difficult to penetrate. Okay, we read on. Although the Buddha saved countless beings, in actuality, there was no being that he saved. Beings save themselves. This is called crossing over living beings, but not attaching to the marks of doing so. Mahasattvas are not like us ordinary people who do a good deed and then say, I have caused a certain number of people to live the home life. Or they say, I have caused a certain number of people to believe in Buddhism. So and so is one I convinced to believe in the Buddha Dharma. So and so is one I introduced to the Buddha Dharma. Ordinary people are attached to so many marks. Why? It is because they are deluded. If they had great wisdom, they would have no attachment to monks. Bodhisattvas should separate from all monks, and then they may attain Anuttara Samyat Sambhuhi, means become a Samana Sambuddha. If one does not separate from monks, one is not a Bodhisattva, Mahasattva, have great wisdom. The third quality is Mahasattva believe in the great Dhamma. What is the great Dhamma? The great Dhamma is the Dhamma of the great vehicle. Means the Sammasambuddha way, not the sainthood way. The great Dhamma is the Dhamma of the great vehicle. You must believe in the Dhamma door of the great vehicle. You must deeply believe in Pranya. You must deeply believe in cause and effect. And you must deeply believe in the Dhamma door of the great vehicle's real mark. You need great belief because the Buddha Dharma is as vast as the sea and can only be entered by means of faith, without faith. Although the Buddha Dharma is vast, you will not be crossed over by means of it. Why? Because you have no faith, so it says, this one you must listen. Faith is the source of the way. Very true. If you want to cultivate this Dhamma, you must have faith. Faith is number one, most important. The Buddha of merits and virtue. So these two sentences, they are connected. Faith is the source of the way. And faith is also the mother of all merits and virtue. It nourishes all good roots. Because from faith, all the other spiritual faculty will fall into place. Without saddha, there is no virya. Without virya, you cannot develop the stability of sati leading to samadhi. Then without sati and samadhi, wisdom cannot arise. That's why faith is number one. Where do good roots come from? They come from faith. They grow out of the mind filled with faith. Faith is the mother of the merits and virtue that you cultivate. Therefore, belief in the great Dhamma is the third quality of a great Mahasattva. That's why having faith is very important. Great Bodhisattvas believe in all the great Dhammas. They have faith in the supreme wonderful Dhamma. They believe especially deeply in the wonderful Dhamma Lotus Flower Sutta, Miao Fa Lian Hua Jing. Thus, they believe in the great Dhamma. If we have genuine and great faith in the Buddha Dharma, then we are Mahasattvas. 2. The Vajra Sutra says, all who hear these phrases and produce even one thought of pure faith are completely known and completely seen by the Tathagata. Only one single thought of the most pure, firm faith brings blessing or blessedness and virtue. which surpasses that of one who has made enough offering of the seven precious treasure to fill the great trigliocosm. The thus come one is certain to know your thought, your faith will not have been in vain. Excuse me. Student of the Buddha Dharma should bring forth a resolve based on genuine faith, and then they will be able to obtain a response. For example, there are those in this sutra assembly who have taken ill with the flu and who have coughed. I had intended to tell them to rest, but they still grit their teeth and insist on listening to the sutra lecture. This proves that they have genuine faith. Belief in the Buddha and the Dharma should be as genuine as that. When I was young and listening to the sutta, I too was sometimes ill, but I never failed to attend the Dharma meeting. I make up my mind that as long as I was breathing, I will study the Dhamma. I would not rest unless I was totally bedridden and unable to move. I never would have thought that now I would meet so many who know my sound and who also listen to the Dhamma even in the face of illness and all. However, one should not force things. If it's too uncomfortable, it's all right to rest. Then the fourth great virtue or quality of a great Mahasattva is the understanding of the great principle. So this is another great quality, understanding of the great principle. What is the great principle? Above it is said that one must have the great faith. In order to understand the great principle, one must do so by means of faith. In the Avatamsaka Sutta, one speaks of the four stages of faith: understanding, practice, and certification. First of all, you must believe, then you must understand. After you understand, you must put your understanding into actual practice. Then through actual practice, you may gain certification. So these are the four stages. What is the great principle? I will tell you. You must understand that all living beings basically are Buddhas. That is the great principle. This refers to the first of the six levels of identity with the Buddha. That of identity with the Buddha in principle. In principle, everyone is a Buddha. However, in order to realize Buddhahood, you must cultivate. If you fail to cultivate and just say, I'm a Buddha, the Buddha, 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 that's useless. It's like calling yourself the emperor, saying, I'm the emperor. I'm the emperor. But you do not have subject and minister who are loyal to you. Do the people support you? Of what use is a self-proclaimed emperor if you say that you are Buddha in principle? You are correct, but you must specifically cultivate. Otherwise, you will be unable to return to the roots, go back to the source, and recognize your original face, but like the main mode. Why must one understand that all living beings are basically Buddha? It is because the real marked wisdom is not separate from the mind of living beings or sentient beings. The wisdom of the real monk is complete with the mind of us all. Therefore, the fourth quality is to understand the great principle. Then the fifth quality is they cultivate the great conduct. Which Dhamma Dharma should one cultivate? One must diligently cultivate the six perfection or paramitas and the 10,000 conducts. What are the six paramitas? The first one is giving or dana parami. First of all, you must develop and perfect yourself to have this Dana Parami. Giving means to give to others, not to instruct others to give to you. Some people talk a lot about giving by telling others to give to them, but they don't give to others. Not only are they not bodhisattva, they aren't even as good as arahats. Giving has been discussed many times. There are three kinds of giving. The giving of materialistic wealth, the giving of dhamma, the giving of fearlessness. The giving of materialistic wealth includes inner and outer wealth. Outer wealth refers to one's kingdom and treasury, to one's wife and children. Those who practice the bodhisattva way have no thought at all of self or others, and so they think, what is mine is yours, and what is yours, I don't necessarily want. They have no mark of others and no mark of self, and so they are able to give away their kingdom, their homes, and even their wives or children. Sakyamuni Buddha, for example, should have become a king, but he chose instead to become a monk. He had three very beautiful wives, but he didn't want them. He renounced them and let them go on their own way. Relinquishing the glory of royalty, he went to the Himalayas to cultivate the way. Inner wealth refers to our head. If someone wants your head, we give it up without a second thought. Our eyes, if someone wants our eye, we also give them up. We give our brain, our marrow. We give our brain and marrow in the same way. Head, eyes, brain and marrow, skin, blood, flesh, sinus and bones, all can be given to others. What is meant by giving of Dhamma? It is to speak the Dhamma to benefit sentient beings, to teach and transform all living beings by explaining the Buddha Dhamma to them. Of all the givings or offering, the Dhamma offering is supreme. The offering of Dhamma is to propagate the Buddha Dhamma for the sake of living beings. Thus, students of the Buddha Dhamma should learn how to lecture on the sutta. Do not hold a lot of wealth and fail to come to the aids of starving mass. Those who understand the Buddha Dhamma must introduce it to others. They should think, if I understand 1%, I will explain 1% to others. If I know 100%, I will explain 100%. This is the gift of Dhamma. The third is the gift of fearlessness. When someone encounters disaster or calamity that terrify them, at that very moment, you should go to reassure them, saying, don't be afraid, this is not important. You will certainly evolve or respond, because your heart is so good, certainly nothing terrible will come of it. Having dispelled their fear, you have given them the gift of fearlessness. Thus, there are three kinds of giving. Actually, the gift of fearlessness is more to that. You see, when sentient beings are afflicted by the first noble truth reality, what happens is most of them have this, what they call fear, worry, and anxiety because of their delusion. They cling, they attach. Then they hold on to their so-called problem. So when they hold on to such problem, which they attach to through delusion, suffering arises. And suffering are normally in the form of fear. Fear is behind all suffering. Fear of losing your loved one. Fear of not understanding what happened. Fear of death. Fear of losing your job, your wealth, your property, your whatever loved ones. And also fear of, like, been shamed, or your whatever title that is being shamed by others. So all this lead to fear. Fear of losing, fear of the unknown, fear, a lot of things behind suffering are triggered off by fear. That's why the gift of fearlessness is to help people overcome their first noble truth realities problem when they encounter them. So when you can give them good Dhamma advice, let them have the confidence to actually recover from all this situation. That is the actual giving, the giving of fearlessness. Means you are able to apply the Buddha Dharma to help save living beings, to bring them out of such fear, such suffering, such misery. Yeah. So Dharma work that can connect people and bring forth the understanding to liberate their mind, to solve their mundane problem or affliction, is the gift of fearlessness. So in that aspect, the understanding is there deeper and clearer. Just now we just covered the first of the six parameters, Dana Parami. The second parameter is morality or sila. There are many different sets of moral precepts. There are the five precepts, the eight precepts, the ten precepts, and the ten major and 48 minor bodhisattva precepts. There are also the 250 precepts of the bhikkhus and the 348 precepts for bhikkhunis. We should hold them, all these precepts. But morality, if you understand, is beyond precepts. Precept is just the rules, the training rules that the Buddha has introduced during his time. Initially, there were very few basic precepts. In fact, it started off with the five precepts, which are very basic and fundamental. But later on, as the Sangha developed, there are more and more condition that requires more and more of these precepts. And they were actually introduced as the need arise. So precepts are training rules that the cultivator undertake to train themselves to abstain from certain action or things. This is to protect the cultivator, because precept, especially the major evils, if you violate precepts, you create evil. And the five precepts are major evils. When you break them, you violate them, it has evil karmic consequences. That's why it will lead to karmic negativity, karmic downfall. Then it will cause karmic obstruction to the individual. Then it can also obstruct you from many things, from receiving things, from receiving the teaching, from receiving whatever goodness or benefits, or from meeting the Dhamma, the Triple Gem. So karmic obstruction can be very, very dangerous. And it can actually obstruct living being in very, very different, very detrimental ways. So if you are not a cultivator who understands all this, then you will not be afraid of karma. But if you are a true cultivator who understands all this, you will be very, very careful of karma. So like the Buddha's advice is to avoid all evil. Then do good. Cultivate wholesomeness wherever there is condition. Then of course finally purify the mind to develop wisdom. So basically, in order to avoid all evil, you must have wisdom. Before you have the wisdom, the level of morality or precepts that you are able to keep is limited. Limited. Because without the mind that has developed the transformation, the understanding, your ability to comprehend precepts is limited. Even the precept is worded in such a way. Take for example the first precept. Panatipata viramani sikkhapadam samadhiyami. We undertake the training rules to abstain from killing or causing harm to fellow living beings. So this aspect of the precept, without mindfulness, without awareness, without Dhamma understanding, you cannot keep. You think you don't kill, then you already safe. You didn't break the precept. No. Sometimes, because of your selfishness, your delusion, you yourself didn't kill. But you created the causes and conditions to kill. Your intention to kill. You can hire an assassin. As a politician, you may, through your own selfish gain, cause people to kill. Or cause riots, war, all those things that leads to a lot of killing. So all this have its karmic repercussion, karmic condition behind. So when we say we undertake the training rule to abstain, means throughout. That's why the precept that we are given under the Buddhist understanding is so different. We were never told to thou shalt not something, kill or what. Because that is specific, but limited to own action. Then they try to circumvent it. If I don't kill, if I pay others to kill, means I don't violate the precept, where it says thou shalt not. But the precepts of the Buddhists that the Buddha introduced is different. He said we undertake the training rule to abstain, means we must be mindful. Way that whatever cause due to our thought process, our action, or our conditioning to instigate people to kill or to cause war, terror, and all those things is included under the precept. We undertake the training rule to abstain from doing all those things, whether you do it or through another person or agent or through another means, is all included under these precepts. So when it comes to morality, sila, it is the moral understanding, the moral principle of what constitutes evil. Whatever that has the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion, they constitute evil. That's why the Buddha called it the evil roots. So when you have evil roots within your thought process, these are all wrong thoughts. That's why wrong thoughts are thoughts with the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion that will condition your suffering, your misery, your karmic negativity. They will condition your fear, worry, anxieties, sorrow, lamentation, affliction, and all those things. So the evil roots, we have to reflect on it, contemplate on it, develop clear understanding of what constitutes greed. We have to expand it. It's not greediness alone. All of your selfishness, your desire, your craving, your covetousness, your whatever they call it, craving or possessiveness, they are all part of greed. When you are very authoritative, then like you want to dominate people, you want to control people, all these are classified as greed. Like you want power, authority, then you abuse them. This create the evil roots of greed. They call it lobha. Then the evil roots of anger, hatred, ill will, including envy, jealousy, negativity of mind state, like and dislike, pleasant and unpleasant mind states. They are all part of the evil roots. Then the worst one is delusion, sakayatiti, self-delusion, that condition the evil roots of greed, hatred, and selfishness, and all the negativity of coming with your attachment, your craving, your desire, all this leading to all the fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow and lamentation, afflictions, born of sakayatiti or self-delusion. These are major evils, evil roots. So when you understand them through wisdom, then only you can put them into practice to cultivate them. To put them into practice and cultivate them, first you must have the understanding of what constitutes evil. The three evil roots, expand on them, reflect, contemplate until very clear. Then develop mindfulness. You have to train your mind to be aware, to be mindful. Without mindfulness, you cannot see your subtle mental intention behind your evil roots. You cannot see. You cannot see. You cannot cultivate. You cannot abstain. You cannot undertake the training rule to abstain from certain action and arising of thought. Before the thought arise, when the thought arise, all this has its coming implication. Even at the thought level, it can have coming, because your hatred is sent out negative tendency. Then your craving, your desire to steal, to possess, to control, to misappropriate. So all this has its vibration. And the vibration were conditioned into transgression, means action, speech, where the actual precept can be broken and has its severe effect. So all this is part and parcel of cultivation. If you can cultivate and develop all this understanding, then you are a true cultivator. Then precept morality is not just about precepts. It's way beyond precepts. Precept is just the training rule, the initial phase. That's why avoiding all evil is not easy. You need wisdom to avoid evil. You need mindfulness to see them and to be able to cultivate them and make it into a living reality so that you have the embodiment of the Dhamma to avoid all evil. That's like a cultivator who has developed the understanding and the awakening. They are different. they no need to like force themselves to what I should say, comply with precepts and all those things. They will not use the thought to say, I undertake the training rule to abstain. Oh, I must not do this. Become very rigid. It's at the mind level, the mental intention behind, before it trigger off transgression, before action, speech, and the arising of the thought process. So all this, like the Buddha said, you must have the right effort to abandon them when they have arisen. The evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion means wrong thought, wrong speech, and wrong action. Then after you have developed the wisdom and the understanding and the mindfulness, you can actually arise the right effort to prevent them from arising. The moment you see the yonisomanasikara, the understanding, will cause the delusion to cease, then it can have the ability to prevent the wrong thought, wrong speech, and wrong action from arising. And this is the training, the cultivation that you must develop. Then of course the third right effort is to purify. The third right effort is the right effort to cultivate all those virtues that are still not in you, like the generosity, sincerity, respect, kindness, gentleness, and compassion, love, sympathetic joy, and all those things. So all these are the four right efforts cultivation. Then once you have developed them, then the final right effort is to improve or refine upon whatever right thought, right speech, and right action that you have developed until you can perfect them all. So this is how you develop the perfection of morality, sila parami. So through wisdom, through mindfulness, through actual understanding, you cultivate. So having faith to develop the understanding is just the initial stage. Pariyati means the learning of the teaching. Then apply this teaching through cultivation. Then you need to cultivate them. Then you need to realize them, awaken, and certify to the awakening. So all these are very important. Okay, we stop here. The third paramita, which is Kanti of patience, we will do later. And we will open up for Q&A. Question and answer.
Good evening, Rachel, Mrs. Phil, and all Kalamitas. I also wish to say that we hope that everybody have enjoyed the New Year celebration.
Yeah, Chinese New Year. We have a very good break. 2 weeks plus a bit, about 16 days.
Yeah, Brazil.
Yes.
I was listening to the talk that you all had at Pamasuri's house.
Ah, that one very good.
Actually, the talk, I only finished the one on the, I think it was first January, is it?
First January. There's another one.
I've not been able to listen to that.
You should listen. Both are very good.
You see, when I heard Pamasuri and Brother Tune talking about their experiences and all that regarding their daughter. I was thinking, all of us will have to go through the first number we really learn from that, Brother Tune.
Yeah.
And it somehow strengthen our faith.
Yes.
That we have learned from the Dharma.
Yeah.
And we can apply it.
Yes.
But always is with hindsight that we say, this and that. But I think that as we go through life,
yes.
it will be so much easier for us.
Correct.
To not to panic so easily.
Yeah. You will come to realize as a cultivator, as a Dhamma practitioner, you have changed. You have become different. Because when you confront reality, especially the first number two reality, which many of us have gone through because we have lived life long enough. So just like what the Buddha has mentioned under the second turning of the four number two, the first number two, we say this number two for dukkha is to be understood. How can we understand it? We can only understand it by confronting it. If you don't confront, it is just theory. You just maybe reflect on it, contemplate on it, but you never experience it. You never go through it. You never confront it. So it is different. It's just like Yun Chan last night used to say, "Bread to deal other people's problem very easy. Oh, we can give advice some more. No need to worry. Don't attach. Don't cling. Not so real. Not what you think." But when it comes to your own situation, your own loved ones, and things that affect the individual personally, and that is the test. If it's somebody else, the test is not there. So like you listen, you will understand, but you also gone through yourself, like you explained earlier on, you went through the phases where you had to confront that disease, cancer and all those things, then you put through, you survive. Then later on was your sister or what?
My second sister.
Second sister, huh? Then there are many other first number two related reality like career and all those things. Then life itself, the reality that you are able to face them. Last time, before you had the Dhamma, you confront it differently. Most of the time, it's without Dhamma, the fear, the worry, the anxiety, the thought project, and you don't know what to do. And most of the time, people without Dhamma, they suffer. They become afflicted. Then the fear, the worry, the whatever karmic affliction that they experience is actually very traumatic, and sometimes it can be very like severe in its ability to afflict people. But when you have the Dhamma, you realize initially, like Paramasuri, but you know, they went through, even your case later on, you see the big difference. You have the understanding, they finally come to realize that that initial worry or projection of thought, which is very normal, very natural, because human beings tend to have attachment, craving, clinging, where we live in a conditioned world. Unless your Dhamma is very stable, you have already awakened, the wisdom is already there, then the yonisomanasikara will straight away spontaneously arise, then it will prevent all this unnecessary fear, worry, anxiety, or negativity of thought process from arising. Then you can come to terms with the reality, be at peace. Then like what Brother Teo and Paramasuri Deo and your side, you have developed understanding, you do what you have to do. Where this is the reality of life and existence. So when you accept, you are at peace. Then when you are at peace, you can come to terms with it. Then you inquire, reflect, what actually happened. Then how can I resolve this amicably to the application of Noble Eightfold Path, following the Dhamma way. And then you realize all this can be resolved without having to go through suffering. This is the teaching. Otherwise, human being cannot handle. Most of them develop fear, worry, anxiety, and get themselves caught until their thought process become so, like entangled until they develop depression. This thought that is very negative can cause a lot of suffering, sorrow, lamentation, leading to depressive thinking. Then the cocoon of thought will create what they call severe suffering or traumatic type of suffering. Then they develop what they call mental issue, mental problem. That's why a lot of them become, they call it, they enter depression without knowing that they are depressed. Their suicidal thought, then they become very like unstable. They develop insomnia. They cannot sleep. Their fear is so intense, so traumatic in their experience. Then they don't know what to do. That fear is a very negative energy. And that one actually create a lot of panic attack and all those things that can make living beings suffer and miserable. So all this, as Dharma practitioner, we can see them clearly. Then we can develop the understanding. Then like the Buddha says, suffering need not be. Why must you allow the thought to project and develop all the ideas? These are not reality. What is thought? Sankara. Sankara anicchang, sankara dukkhang. It will lead to suffering. But when you know it's anicchang, then anatta, empty nature, non-self, not what you are, not what you think, then you start to develop the Dhamma understanding of this wrong thought. Thought that condition, your fear, worry, anxiety, these are all wrong thoughts. You should abandon them. They are not conducive for life. Cultivation of the Dhamma will enable you to understand this form and mind is a very grand tool for you to come. So make use of it. This one is subject to karma. You have to take care of it. That's why we have to develop the understanding of the precepts and all those things. Follow the advice of the Buddha to avoid all evil, the good, and purify the mind and develop wisdom to liberate the mind so that it will not suffer, it will not be deceived by the phenomenal world of consciousness and form. So all this understanding will surface. Then we know how to live life. Then we know how to confront life. And all this will make us completely different. We are no longer ordinary puttacharanas or sentient beings who has the delusion, especially self-delusion, sakkayaditti, that condition, the three evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion that bring about karmic downfall, karmic negativity, suffering, misery. So all this understanding was come to be when we develop the cultivation appropriately, correctly. So for your case, I think you have the understanding. That's why when you listen, you find it very meaningful, very beautiful. So sadhu to you, Fiji.
Yeah, Brother Teo, as we learn the Dharma, we look at things slightly different.
Yeah.
And like you say, when we are able to understand, we can accept things, maybe not initially, but it within a short while, we can accept like things are the way they are is because it's meant to be.
Yeah.
When we can accept that, the mind automatically shifts to a calmer.
Yeah, it will settle down.
It
will not project. It will not like go and worry about it. Because all of your fear, worry, anxiety will not help you. It will not solve your problem. What you need is understanding. When you understand, the problem dissolves itself. That's why Dhamma is about wisdom, about understanding. When I understand, no more issue. when I don't understand, then a lot of problems arise. The thought will project. Then the habitual tendency, the fear, the worry, the anxiety, the doubt, the uncertainty, all this will trigger off. Then the thought will create all the wrong thought. Wow, what happened? With this, I'm going to have big problem. So depending on whatever first noble truth reality that is, the thought can project until it's very, very fearful, traumatic. Even fear of losing a job, those who are working, because that salary is so important to them, their installment, their commitments, their daily expenses. It all depends on the income from the salary, especially people who are salary worker. So the fear of losing the income stream is so tremendous, traumatic. It can trigger very severe mental suffering and misery. And that intensity of fear can really be very traumatic. That's why people can go mad, can have suicidal thought, can become like very, very severely afflicted, panic. So all this, you can see them. In fact, a lot of these people who came and seek help, I can see the fear, the misery, the suffering. Very intense inside them. They are like completely lost, so deluded, and so much suffering, misery. So all this, we will be able to have the understanding to develop all this, what we call understanding that lead us to have this joy, that we have the Dhamma understanding to enable us to be free of all these things. That's why we will have a lot of gratitude towards the Buddha and his teaching, towards Kayamita and all those who have actually helped us develop the causes and conditions for us to come into contact with the Buddha Dharma. Then together we develop the cultivation, the understanding, and transform and become so different. Without the Dhamma, it's not easy to understand life, not easy to live life, not easy to have the good life. Most people suffer, even the pandemic, not easy to confront. In fact, a lot of people who are not so fortunate because of their karma, they suffer, afflicted, very miserable. Even the recent flood, and many of the many part of the world, they are facing a lot of climatic type of disaster. Even the US now, the weather is very bad, the snow and all those things. And many part of the world, like I think today I heard the news, Brazil, the whole mountain, I think, landslide, very severe. A lot of buildings were affected. And it's the whole of the mud flow. The whole thing just washed down. And it's many times more severe than the earlier one that we have witnessed, like the one you saw in Japan earlier on a bit. It actually is very minor compared to the one in Brazil. Maybe tomorrow you will see in the newspaper and all those things. So all this is what the first noble truth realities are. And these are reality that are not easy for living being or sentient being to develop understanding and confront unless they have the Dhamma. So salute to you, Vijay. I think you all have the understanding and the ability to appreciate all this, then you can actually develop the interest in listening to all this, then you can share it with Kayanamitas. Mm. So you can continue. Yeah.
In view of all the pandemic, all the catastrophe happening around the world, we are so fortunate to be able to have the Dharma to see this without being severely affected.
Yeah.
As we can accept that a lot of actually like the present pandemic and all the catastrophe that is happening in the world because of these climatic changes, with our understanding of the Dharma, it's so much easier for us to accept this.
Yes, very true.
Especially with the understanding of the law of karma.
Yeah.
And so that I feel that I am not so affected by this, how to say, these happenings in the world. Of course, we send out our metta to all these people.
Oh, definitely.
People
that one is very natural.
I feel that the best that we can do is with our understanding and not to be, how to say, to create more karmic negativity for ourselves.
Not to contribute
everybody.
To the totality of consciousness that is negative. Because when we change, the individual change, then the individual will start to have an influence on the totality of consciousness. Because our mind state, our pure thought, our wisdom, understanding will transform our thinking, our thought process, and our virtue will shine forth. And that one will contribute to world peace. But the numbers are very small. That's why we need more and more. Then like you say, when you read it, metta, love, and all those things, it has its contribution. But limited, because the numbers that has this understanding and ability to do this are very few. That's why we need to have more and more Dharma practitioners who have the wisdom and the understanding to have this type of mind state, the pure thought, the pure consciousness, the pure nature from the awareness nature to surface. And to contribute to the overall transformation of the totality of consciousness to make the world a better world. Otherwise, the world keep on having this type of, like you say, the weather problem, the environmental problem, the what we call off and on, the disaster. Nature's disaster that keep on afflicting the planet, causing a lot of like even the Ukraine, Russia, NATO, US, the trade war and all those things. They are creating a lot of tension, negativity. Then the people are affected. Even Middle East, Afghanistan and a lot of other countries that are affected, even the Iranians, Iran earlier on was Iraq, and many other countries that has like Lebanon and other things having their internal problems. And now even the states, US, they have a lot of problems there, their political problem, their racial problem, or the various type of mentality of the citizen, even over the mass issue also can develop until very negative. Then the vaccination also can be a major issue to them. You look at the way they strike Canada, US, the truckers, they go and block the bridge and all this thing, and many other things. Then there are off and on, we can hear through the news, of things happening, calamity, nature's disaster, and all these things. So, like you mentioned, which is very beautiful. Now with the Dhamma, you can understand all this much better. You can accept them for what they are with the Dhamma understanding. Just like the Buddha said, these are realities. Conditioned like that, things will be like that. Whatever that arise, there are causes and conditions behind. Happen already means it cannot be otherwise. So we have to come to terms with all this reality, accept them. Then we radiate our metta. We do our part. Wherever we can actually help out or contribute, we will do. But there is a limit to what the individual can do. But since there are causes and conditions, that's why it will manifest. And we will know how to develop our nature to actually blend into all this. And help in whatever way. But looking back, I think, despite what happened, almost 2 years of pandemic and all this thing, and with all the happening all over the world, we all, as Kayamita overall, I think, are very fortunate. Most of us are still, I think, relatively doing very well, except for some clan people, and I think some of these people whom we came to know recently affected by the flood. There are some in clan, I think, and a few in Shalom. Shalom one is, I think, the that place. What is that place? Very prone to flood on.
Sri Muda.
Sri Muda, Taman Sri Muda, yes. So that area. But apart from that, I think most of our Kayamita, we are okay. Most of us are not affected. Even the people in Subang, PJ, KL, SS2O, none of us are affected. So all this, when we reflect and contemplate, we rejoice with our good karmic understanding, our karmic nature, that we are able to avert all this, to avoid all this, and we don't have to actually become affected. But with the Dhamma, even if we are affected, there is no problem at all. I saw some of the Kayamita who received the aids. I think Suyan held a few. I think they were very positive despite what happened. Especially one of the lady, I think I forgot the name really. She actually go through quite traumatic experience of what the flood was. Yeah, it flooded her house quite badly and a lot of things were lost. But through her faith, to her understanding, she was able to pull through. Then when the help come, the assistant come, she got faith. She developed the joy and all this thing. Then she tried to help others too. That's why with Dhamma, you become different. So very good, Vijay. Anything else you want to add?
Thank you. As we are talking about all this, I really I really have to develop my understanding of the mind, the chitta.
Yeah.
Because you know, as you were earlier explaining about the four efforts.
The four right efforts. Yes.
Yeah, four right efforts. Yeah, it states so clearly that if we are not able to see our mind. Understand and
the mindfulness and awareness.
Yeah, and how the mind starts, and if we do not see the sankhara coming up, that itself will lead to a lot of heedless thoughts.
Yeah, heedless things where you cannot cultivate. That itself
will create a lot of things, Brother.
Yes.
Because nowadays that I'm here in Penang, again, unfortunately, I get distracted by a lot of things. And this is one of the things that I see very clearly, Brother.
Yeah.
It's like every single thing that comes up, the mind just follow it, Brother, and then it goes to a lot of stories. And, and then by the time I realize, I go like, Lama, where did you go to? You know?
Yeah.
It's like all this heedless thinking is so useless, you know?
Yeah.
For us, it's so useless.
Correct.
And that's, I see that in my understanding of the Dharma, with my understanding of the Dharma, and I still cannot purify my mind. Then it doesn't serve. My learning of the Dharma does not really reflect.
I understand what you mean. Yeah.
Not beneficial.
So,
not that beneficial.
So I will
help you explain, PJ,
because you don't have the stability to explain all this thing. Because now you have the understanding already. And you can see the difference because you are more mindful. But when you are back in Penang, especially during New Year time, you realize that the training and the understanding that you early on have when you are with your religious routine throughout the day when you are doing it, you can actually see all this, understand all this, and cultivate very easily. But when you are back in Penang for the New Year and all those things, then you realize your thinking process can still be like lost, proliferate. We call it the proliferation of thought. Means this thought become the normal heedless thinking. It can get itself entangled, then create all the story. Then because you had the Dhamma, you realize, hey, what is going on? How come this thing can still go on? Initially, it's like that. Because it has not stabilized. It has not transformed. So when it has stabilized and transformed, all these things become different again. You will see it for yourself. Then you realize, how come like that now that nature cannot be affected anymore? The sankhara cannot move the way it used to move anymore. Yeah. But initially, before the stability come in, it will still have that ability. That's why just now when I was explaining, I think I make use of the condition to explain again. Dhamma is not what people think. Like sometimes you read a lot of this sharing, like a lot of Dhamma inside there, very beautiful, like they teach you how to reflect, how to contemplate. But do you realize a lot of this, either they copy from somewhere or the cultivator who has the understanding, they write it out, then they read, they find it very interesting, then they share. So to cultivator, like most of you all, you may think, it's very beautiful. Well, a lot of the things are what you have gone through. But the thing that people don't realize is that one is encouraging people to use the thought. Understand or not? The thought to like try to live that way, to reflect and contemplate and make you become like that. But the cultivation is not like that. The cultivation is the opposite. You have to develop the cultivation first before you can have the understanding. Then only you can reflect and contemplate and develop the ability to have that type of Dhamma inside you to live life. It's not using the thought. Using the thought, you are trapped. You cannot actually develop the progress. So what you need is the pariyati part initially, the learning or the teaching. You have to learn what constitutes evil or sick. Then you have to develop the mindfulness, the awareness, the stability of spiritual faculty. Then the four right effort, everything. Then you have to start to put it into practice, cultivate them. So all this cultivation needs mindfulness, stability of mindfulness. That's why when your mindfulness stabilizes, when your awareness nature stabilizes, then you can see. You are able to be aware. Then when you are able to be aware, you start to witness. You start to observe. Then you start to understand who you are, what you are, and how this sankhara get you into entanglement and all that. So after you have seen that, then you have to determine firmly with faith, with the sadha virya, then go all out to cultivate, to stabilize your understanding, and with mindfulness, do the four right effort. Then straighten your view. Then through the third way and the fourth way, silence your mind more and more. Not until that stability, the understanding come about, all these so-called Dhamma words, no meaning. You try to live like what is written there, but these are using thought. When you use thought, it's still a thought. So the thought is trying to behave the way that is mentioned. So all this, if you are not a cultivator, you cannot see. That's why people will say, wow, this is very good, this is very good. But the whole lot of the understanding and the cultivation is not there. Because that one doesn't teach you how to cultivate. Doesn't teach you how to develop the Dhamma understanding to develop the cultivation and make it a living reality. And that part is the most important. The understanding that leads to the cultivation, then the cultivation leads to the transformation. The understanding and the transformation, the straightening of view, until it becomes a living reality. Until the yonisomana sikara is inside, that it will spontaneously arise when you confront life, when you go through life. Then you realize all this Dhamma will fall into place after that. That process is the bali. After the cultivation, only all these things come up. So people who go and share all this, circulate all this, to me, no meaning, unless they are cultivators who are already in the process of developing those understanding. Then it serves some purpose. Otherwise, no meaning. Otherwise, you may read, you may have the joy, wow, but did you really develop the cultivation? Did you really understand what the Dhamma is? Because the understanding of it is just the beginning. Then to put it into practice and cultivation, you need to start with mindfulness. The spiritual faculty leading to sati. Stability of sati. The silent mind, the awareness nature is most important. Without that, you cannot see. Without that, you cannot observe. You cannot have the direct seeing, the awakening, the insight, and all those things. Then all the Dhamma will not surface. They are just words, thought-based. So this part, I hope Kayamita starts to develop the understanding and not to be like drawn and taken. I won't say take for a ride, like your focus get like dislodged.
Go astray, because,
you go and chase for the Dhamma. When you chase for the Dhamma, you overlook the cultivation. When you overlook the cultivation, you go back to square one. You didn't progress. Because that one is thought-based. The thought will trigger off others. So this is something that Kayamita, I think by now, should have the ability to reflect and develop the understanding. The most important thing is the mindfulness, the awareness, the stability of it. Then the spiritual faculty will fall into place. Well, without sati, all the other things cannot take off. The cultivation also cannot take off. All of your Dhamma knowledge, no meaning, no use. Even to keep precept, you need mindfulness, you need awareness, you need faith, you need understanding of what constitutes evil. And the real understanding of the four right efforts. Even the right effort to abandon the wrong thought is not easy, the five ways. You have to go to the third way at least. Then after the third way, you develop the wisdom through the fourth way. Then with these two, you stabilize the understanding. Then you come to know clearly what all those mind states that arise within life. Means your fear, worry, anxiety, your selfishness, your greed, your anger, your hatred. All these are dependent originating mind state, not intrinsic. They are not you. See it, realize it. Then trace the origination factor. How did fear arise? In fact, the Dhamma sharing that Sui sent out today, how to overcome habitual tendency. Listen to that one. That one is a cultivation. You can understand that one. That's why Pocheng rejoiced. Pocheng put there the real cultivation. That one is more important. Listen to that and develop the cultivation.
Yeah, Baratio, that was a very good talk, Baratio.
Yes, that talk was very good.
Yeah, that was a very good talk.
Yes.
A lot of us do not put enough emphasis on mindfulness itself.
Yes.
It's actually the basis of Dharma cultivation. After you have learned the Dharma itself,
yes.
The mindfulness itself will help us understand a lot of things.
Yes, and see the real Dharma, not the knowledge one. Because without the silent mind, there is no direct seeing. There is no real silent observation of what is the reality. Because the conditioning from the memory, the brain, the views, opinion, and conditioning keep on coming in to interfere. And that one is the mundane mind. That one is full of delusion, evil. That one is not with the Dhamma wisdom. So you cannot cultivate with thought. There's a thought-based cultivation will lead you nowhere. Because you're supposed to realize the Dhamma, which is beyond thought, beyond mind. You have to silence everything to develop the direct seeing, the awakening. Then all this will transform you. Otherwise, you cannot transform, you cannot change. If you don't see, you will not change. You will not wake up. Without mindfulness, all this, you cannot be aware at all. How it stir, how it condition you into the duality, you cannot see, you cannot understand. You still want to blame people and all those things. That's how only cultivator understand. Then they realize all this stirring and movement come from their own sakayatiti, self-delusion. Without self-delusion, there is no movement at all. Thing is just the way it is silent. The true mind stay there. But the egoic mind come in when there is delusion. The views, opinion, conditioning, that's how the analysis will start. Then that mind that do the analysis will start to reason. Then it creates more and more entanglement, more and more duality. That's why they cannot come out of the delusion. Sakayaditi.
Yeah, Pratil, we are so used to the busy mind that we don't see it.
But now you all start to have this understanding behind. That's why you know how to reverse all this. Because the ability to be aware is the beginning of cultivation. When you are aware that you are heedless, that is the beginning of cultivation. Because when you see your own defilement, you understand that you have to stabilize it. You have to straighten your view. You have to develop the clear understanding until it's very stable. Then this Yoniso Manasikara will surface. Then when it surfaces, the understanding straight away transforms and free your mind. And the old way, the habitual tendency loses its power. Otherwise, the habitual tendency keep on coming back to the back door and all this thing, telling you things. Why you so stupid? Why you do this? Let things be lah. Why you so kipo? All this chattering will come in one. But the true understanding is the moment you understand Sankara Anicchang, finish. Noma, finish. Yeah. So all this understanding, when they surface, no need to reason, no need to analyze, no need to use your views, opinion, and conditioning to argue. No need. The understanding straight away liberates you. You are not deceived by the phenomenal world of form and consciousness anymore. All this has got no more power over you. That is the real cultivation. So very good sharing today. Sadhu to you, PG, for creating.
Yeah, thank you, Brother, for excellent for explaining. I think I will end it now. It's quite late already.
Yeah, late already.
Thank you, Brother. Good night, everybody.
Thank you for your good condition, Sadhu.